Or you can pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. July 31st, so don't delay. And we look forward to seeing more of you at Cabley.
Good morning. Thank you so much for listening to Art Focus. My name is Ava Lake, and I have with me today Elise Wagner. She's got more than one exhibition up, but the one that you can see here in Portland, Oregon, is at Butters Gallery. I think that's just buttersgallery.com, yes?
Yes.
Yes, and your own website is your name?
Yes.
Yes? Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ava.
Yes. So, exhibition that's at Butters Gallery is called Uncharted Territories. We're going to get into that show, but I kind of want to like just mention everything that's going on with you right now. Aren't you also in a show in Lake Oswego?
I was, Lake Oswego Festival of the Arts. It was just a weekend show in late June.
Right. Well, what about Fire and Water? Is that the
That was
that,
it.
That's what we're talking about? Okay.
Yeah, and Jeff Butters juried it, and there were a handful of people in it, and it was a really nice show. They did a nice job, and there was a panel discussion, and it was really fun.
Sounds good. And then you're going to be in a group show in Seattle? Is that coming up?
Yeah, it's coming up. It's an interesting idea of he took just a few of the artists at Frederick Holmes Gallery in Seattle and decided to ask us why we do what we do. And he had us do these little videos, and it's going to kind of go along with our work as a way for people to kind of understand why artists do what they do, help collectors and buyers of art enjoy the stories associated with the artists, which I think is a very cool idea.
Also, so is this is that video online then?
It will be on Frederick Holmes and Company.com is the full name of the gallery. I think it will be on there somewhere.
But if you were to Google Elise Wagner and just click video, you would find all kinds of videos there, including one that I did with you like years ago, which, you know, was so interesting because it's a studio visit is what I did. And so we're watching her make work, but also she's just kind of explaining like what her studio is about. And just to be on the studio for a minute here, on your website, elisewagner.com, you have a whole studio section, which is shots of your place.
Yeah.
And I just want to ask you, like, tell me your reasons for documenting that and why that is important. I mean, I could give a lot myself, but you have, I think, an ideal situation.
Well, yeah, I do, actually, at my studio. It was really... I was at 333 Studios for many years and paying studio rent like we all do. And I found this house that was ideal to have my own studio building. And I just kind of built it out, you know, like it was already newly built garage, essentially. And I just had it sheetrocked and got some nice windows put in. And so I document it because it was a real... a milestone for me to have my own studio and to continue on my path of teaching and making shows and having kind of a whole central area. I actually have grown to start calling it Wagnerica because it's like this whole compound of creativity going on a lot of the time.
Right. And there's books in there. I remember you had a really wonderful spread. Do you remember that? Okay.
I know, yeah. Our dogs
ate it. Anyway.
Yeah, so much for the salami. Yeah.
Yes. But I like the fact the way you've documented it and everything. But let's now talk a little bit about the exhibition that's at Butters. And I don't know whether to talk about process first or content first, but I think I'm going to do a little back and forth. Uncharted Territories. So I would say cartography, map making kind of is a theme in this. Can you just talk a little bit about what we're seeing when we see your work in the show?
You're seeing what happens in the building of the surfaces of my paintings. So I tend to do things in a way that is both planning but being open to not having a plan. So I start with kind of what I call a territory, you know, a mm-hmm. surface, and then I just build up the surfaces, and I refer to things like meteorology or astronomy in through symbols, and then I work my lines into it, and then color becomes part of the process later.
Mm-hmm.
And I just build the wax layers in such a way that it's kind of creating its own environment, and then I just get very lost in that environment, and I really rely upon having a dialogue with the work as it starts to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I look at it a lot, and then I do things. You know, I respond to it. It's basically I'm creating kind of a narrative or a dialogue with the work and in my initial steps, and then I kind of go from there.
So now, but tell me, were maps, were charts, those kinds of things important to you before you ever made a painting? Let's just say in your earlier life, like.
Well, I've always been attracted to maps and getting my way around, you know. So mm-hmm. I've always had kind of a knack for getting my way around, and I don't know what that's about. But I also like that I've always been attracted to them because of our way of identifying as people, and, you know, our sense of place mm-hmm. is very much centered on, you know, where. So I kind of create these otherworldly mm-hmm. wares, if you will.
Yes.
And they're kind of these nether worlds that are that are of my imagination, essentially, but they're kind of evoked through looking at pictures of the Hubble telescope, or looking out the window of the airplane and mm-hmm. looking at different shapes and taking pictures. And I take a lot of pictures, and then I refer to them, and I compose from pictures a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And line has been a really important part of how I initiate a painting. So
there's,
I'd say,
like,
that mapping
line
has been
right?
going on for a long time in my work. I started with, you know, just making random maps and shapes of paper as the underlayers of my paintings. And then those shapes kind of created these sort of territories.
So you were kind of collaging, is what you're saying? It starts off with combined forms.
Yeah, it did, like a long, long time ago in the early 90s when I started out doing encaustic specifically. And then before that, with oil painting, I was doing a lot of layering of, like, I'd go and rip billboards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd go to this place in Southeast where they had, actually nearby here, and I would rip these pieces of billboards, and then I'd rip them apart, and I'd make collages out of them, and then I was getting
Sounds
frustrated.
Nice. John
that,
Brody did something like that a little bit, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I think he did, yeah. And I started getting frustrated that my collage materials weren't sticking, and so that's what kind of led me to
the wax.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So I was wondering how that happened. Okay,
yeah.
No, this is interesting. I mean, for any collage artist, there is that big issue, like, how long is it going to stay glued or whatever. So for you, that became a solution, but then you ended up taking that solution and ditching the original issue.
Yeah, over time, the collage materials just went away, and it was pretty much all wax all the time. And then now, with my new show, with this new body of work, I'm bringing everything that I've done with encaustic into oil painting. So I'm having those two territories sort of juxtaposed together,
right?
And they're made in a similar way, but with very different materials. And I really love working with contrasting elements like that. I find it really challenging and fun to do. And
so,
I have to keep having fun, because that's...
Of course. But in a nutshell, then, you've got paint, which is giving you lots of pigment, and then wax, which is not. Am I right about that? And you're building those layers?
Well, I have the same amount of control over pigment content in oil paint as I do with...
With wax.
And
okay.
So I'm working with that. I'm working with glazes and low pigmented oil paint, and also the same with encaustic. Only encaustic is it's much more physical, and you can see through it, and you can see these wonderful, you see right through everything, and wonderful shades of very subtle golden colors that I can get from just putting a tiny bit of pigment in the beeswax.
Wow. So I imagine, too, what you're making now, it would take years to get to that point. Like, no one can just start with the complexity, it seems to me, that you're doing.
Yeah,
right?
I wish it wasn't so complicated, you know?
Right. But then you own it. Then you own it, right?
I guess. You know, I mean, I'm using a lot of Gamblin glazes, like using their Galkid quite a bit. And I've been using that for many years. And I just thought one day, wow, what if I just did layers of the oil paint, just like I do with the layers of wax, and see if these two elements can come together. And I've always liked working on diptychs and mm-hmm. kind of
almost like a mirror image,
yeah,
kind
of? Or creating a modular, you know, like working on something over here in the corner and then over here and then going, oh, look, they could maybe go together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. It's kind of like a marriage, you know, you're just like, oh, well, are these guys going to get along? Okay. Are they going to resonate? Let's see.
Well, you know, that's a little bit like James Labrador. He has a million things going on at once, mm-hmm. paintings, and then at some point he tries to see, can they merge? Can they pull together? So
you don't know, and that's the fun part. And I think I love his work, and I think that's probably why. I think it's very fun to kind of have this playful execution, and just really almost you're thinking about it, but you're not. And uh-huh. then you kind of sit back and look at everything, and then you start composing and putting them together like a puzzle. And it's almost like a math problem you have to figure out. And I really like that part of it as well. You know, so I guess I'm process oriented, but I have concept uh-huh. in mind as well.
Sure. And also image driven. I mean, sometimes when I hear about process, it's like we don't care what we're left with at the end. But mm-hmm. you do care what we're left with at the end. I'm talking about aesthetics here.
Yeah, somewhat. There has to be a quality in the work. You know, mm-hmm. it has to be substantive. And, you know, there's a lot of work that isn't. And, you know,
yes.
I won't let it go out the door unless there's really a real stamp on it that says, all right, I work this thing. I'm done. You know, like.
Well, that's an interesting prospect. So, in other words, you could be doing things, going through all of your processes, which is what you need to do, and then in the end, it may not be right.
Mm-hmm.
That happens?
Sometimes, and then it just has to be cast aside, and uh-huh. it's just not going. But the thing is if I get stuck, I don't stop. You know,
right.
I never stop. I just keep going. I just move on to something else.
Right. Do you do like what I would call like test drives? You know, small pieces to execute an idea. I mean, just test driving a little bit.
That is a great question. Because there are these little pieces in my show that are called territory studies.
Nice.
And basically, I started the three, like the one on the Potter Guide.
Uh-huh.
I started those three 30 by 30s with the intention of trying to reinterpret those on a large scale. So I went from a 4-inch square little panel that I made, mm-hmm. and I tried to kind of blow up the composition and bring it into full form as a 30 by 30 with those. So that's kind of how things begin to interact when uh-huh. I'm starting something, is I'll do a few little studies and things, and then I'll try to reinterpret them I'll scale them up, or
right.
I'll think about what colors would be involved. And
You're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Ava Lake, and this is Art Focus. If you want more information about this radio show, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus, and you'll see links to my guests and links to past interviews. I've been here a little over 5 years. Also, Joseph Gallivan is with me now. He is also doing Art Focus. He is someone who used to write about art for the Tribune, and he's back writing about all kinds of things in the Portland Tribune. We're really lucky to have him. I have with me today Elise Wagner. She's got all kinds of things going on, but one thing that you can see here in Portland is an exhibition called Uncharted Territories, which is at Butters Gallery. That's kind of close to Old Town in the Pearl, buttersgallery.com.
Mm-hmm. 520 Northwest Davis, second floor.
And as Elise just mentioned, she was talking about the Potter Guide and said, well, yes, the cover of the Potter Guide, which indeed she's on. So, let's just talk a little, take us through a painting here. So since the image is right here, and I'll just describe it really quickly, and then you tell me if I was right or wrong and what I'm looking at. So I'm seeing green, little bits of green, and orange, and then this cream color. And it's almost like there's these cloud shapes, but there are lines drawn all over. And there's, what is over here on the...
That's just like a bunch of different symbols about asteroids and stuff on the side there.
Uh-huh. Now, how big is this painting?
30 by 30.
30 by 30.
And it's not framed. And so the great challenge for me, usually I have a substrate that I'm throwing the painting on and off the wall with. And I work on the table and I work on the wall. And I've got a Lazy Susan that I spin them around on. And these were challenging because they were just flat board. And so I had to hang them on the wall flat and work on them flat. And then I had to have a framing device, a floater, put on the back of them so that they would float out from the wall just right.
Right.
And I was frustrated because I dropped them on the floor quite a bit while I was working on them.
So that means you had to redo the edges?
No, I mean, it was just, it's when I'm dropping them and stuff, it's all part of the process. I never really, I mean, I, you know, they're
it's
not damaged or anything.
Oh, okay. But yeah. But they're, the hand of the artist is all over these works is what you're saying. So yeah. If there's a little ding here and there, that's fine.
Right. And they're not, but you know, they're not dinged, but.
Talk about how the edge, because what we're looking at here is that that's the wax and paint buildup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I started these with this primer that I make. It's just out of a more sticky wax from a beekeeper, and I add a little bit of pigment to it to give it like this buff kind of yellow look.
Mm-hmm. That's how we start.
And it's basically my obsession with the colors of old papers. And mm-hmm. so I try to get this primer to this color of old paper. Mm-hmm. And then when I get it to that point, I do an initial layer of wax and I use an iron. And I have a fetish for collecting irons at estate sales.
Uh-huh.
And they're these like just normal irons, but not the ones they used in the 40s because those weigh too much.
Uh-huh.
Just like these little slick little things.
Right. But you don't plug them in or anything, right? They're just...
And I iron, I do. Extension cord city in my studio.
All right. I'll bet.
No wireless tools, unfortunately, yet for encaustic. That's kind of a problem.
Uh-huh.
But then I build up the layers, like the cloud-like shapes that you see.
Uh-huh.
And I do it all blindly, like white on white on white on white on white, like for five layers. And
nice.
I'm kind of working in this blind nebula of sorts, but I kind of know what's going to happen.
Because it's color on color, you're not aware of every shape that you're putting on there,
right.
But you will once you start adding color.
Once I start adding the oil paint, then it's revealed to me. So in this way, it's like I built them up like a collagraph plate, which mm-hmm. I do printmaking, and I built them up like as if I was going to print that, the texture. And instead I added oil paint to it. And then I started painting it. I started seeing these environments that I didn't even know were there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started painting those. And then that brought the depth out. And then it just started carrying on with me, this conversation. So all three of them were started at the same time. And they were worked and developed at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Some, like one would be behind one in the process, but
sure.
They would all be tagging
growing.
Along. And
mm-hmm.
then once they were all sort of at this nice, fertile place of development, I could kind of look at one and then take from one and go over to the other and really have...
We're talking to each other.
I love doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I love when that starts happening and things really congeal visually for me, and I just
mm-hmm.
it's almost like I know exactly what to do.
Nice. Now you just mentioned something about the power cord, you know, unfortunately there's no power cordless tools for the encaustic artists, so talk to us just a little bit about that, because I remember seeing photos of your studio and it's like, oh yes, there is the drill, there is the iron, there is, I mean, blowtorch or what have you. What is necessary for your process, and it's a very important part of it, the tools.
Yeah, it is a very important part of it. I can't really be a plain air painter very easily. That would be a very long cord.
It must be hard to do residencies, though, too, right?
Well, yeah. Unless
they have it all there.
When I was at Vermont Studio Center, I had to ship like four boxes of stuff, you
uh-huh.
know, so I had all my stuff. And then I'm like in this schoolhouse in August, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like doing encaustic. I must have been crazy. I was like, why didn't I just bring my pencils and
yes.
some paper? You know, like.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it is kind of an elaborate process. It's like, you know, I have a ventilation hood, and then I have hot plates and brushes and the irons and a wax pen that's like a batiking pen.
Yes.
Only it's, yeah.
Yes.
And irons, heat guns. Blow torches.
It's amazing. Now, the heat gun would be so that you could put something down to a nothingness again? Make it take away the
it's
texture?
Just,
or?
No, it's just, yeah, to make it flat.
Okay.
To flatten things out.
Right.
If you want a really flat
yeah.
look.
Yeah, yeah.
But I work, from working large, I've been working large for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I noticed immediately is that holding my heat gun or my blowtorch for long periods of time when priming a surface or just working the full surface mm-hmm. was just killing me.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like in there with my wrist braces and my, you know. So
Figured out new ways.
Yeah, I found the iron and then I realized that my studio is small enough that all I really need is a 20-foot cord on any given tool. And I can just walk all the way around the studio with my tools. So it's not that big a deal, but when I teach off site and stuff, it's much more of a big deal, and it's always nice when they have things there.
Yes. So now let's just talk a little bit about that. For instance, if you go to Elise Wagner, elisewagner.com, her website, she's got a whole thing on workshops and teaching, and I was kind of blown away how extensive it was. I mean, you've got how many different classes do you teach? And it's not just like take encaustic painting.
Yeah.
It's much more complex than that.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely grown. I've been teaching it for 20 years, and I created this printmaking process, encaustic collagraph monotype, and so I offer...
There's a great video on it, by the way, people. It's amazing. I watched it this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cleo and I made that one day. It was really fun. So I have these weekend workshops, and then I have full day workshops if people just want to kind of understand the rudiments of the process.
Yes.
But I'm kind of getting away from technique and more teaching people how to kind of reach their goals, like with their creative process.
Uh-huh.
And so I get people from all over the world, and they're just wonderful artists, you know, and they all have a different thing to bring to the table.
Uh-huh.
And I really enjoy having that interaction as part of my process, because I do work in my studio all the time by mm-hmm. myself most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so having the energy of other people come in and they all have these stories, and mm-hmm. it's really delightful to hang out and show them things they've never done before.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they have a great deal of experience, and they're professional printmakers or they're people that teach, and you know, and I'm offering all these summer classes right now, and then mm-hmm. when fall comes around, I'm teaching at Sitka as well in September, in the third week of September.
And when's your next class that you're teaching here locally, if people wanted to do something?
That is coming up on July 19th and 20th. It's called Building a History, and it's basically my process of building a painting and showing you how to build a painting.
Cool. So, I like what you just said, where you're saying it's not so much about the technique, it's about helping them get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the totality of being an artist. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, instead of just like, oh, look, I can do this.
This
technique.
Is neat. You're asking people more like, what do you want to say?
Yeah, yeah. And also, what skills do you have that maybe could complement, you know, these skills that you'll learn? So I'm more about people that have more of an art background
mm-hmm.
that come and they want something specific
mm-hmm.
to learn
mm-hmm.
or, and it's not necessarily advanced. I mean, I can work with any learning level. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's not an issue, but I like connecting people with their creative selves,
mm-hmm.
first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also like just introducing them to this and seeing where they go with it. And it's very fun to look on Facebook and see, you know, some of my students and what they've done and that they're selling work. And,
yay.
You know, it's really, it's great to see that.
So let's talk a little bit about just being a survivor. So I...
oh, yes.
So, well, you know, you're a mid-career female woman artist, as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I daily... I'm grateful to just have that, regardless of everything else I'm going to bitch about to you today. So you survived, and you're still doing it. Do you find that, you know, that's part of like being a role model to your students? And also, like, if you were to give them any advice about how to keep on keeping on, you know, mm-hmm. what would you say?
Well, you just have to practice every day. You have to practice all the time. You have to go in there. You have to show up. You know, even mm-hmm. if it's just like for an hour while you're doing laundry at home, like if you have the facilities and you can do it, you just have to make it a daily part of your life. And you have to understand that it's going to evolve with you and whatever else you're going through in your life. So
mm-hmm.
even if like things are just like terrible and bad in every way, and life is just really throwing you some smacks. Mm-hmm. Just go in there and see what comes out, and just keep that momentum. Mm-hmm. That is my advice. You have to just stay consistent and always be percolating, you know, in the background, having these other creative thoughts.
Well, you know, one thing too that you said to me, this was off the mic before we got into the room here. We were sitting outside in the shade, and we talked about how we are doing without doing too. Do you remember mm-hmm. that saying? Like,
yeah.
I know I'm always an artist. Or we're always an artist. It's always there, no matter what else we're doing.
Mm-hmm. It is always there. I mean, you get ideas. I mean, I remember way back when I had in the late 90s, I had this job, and I'm on the number 9 bus on the steel bridge, and I'm going over the bridge, and I'm looking at the contrast of the black lines, and I'm staring at this. And then I just went home and I went to my studio at 333, and I made a whole series of like 12 paintings, and they were just called Memories in Transit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you remember things, mm-hmm. you know, and I was on transit.
Yes.
And I just created these kind of little glints of these moments, these memories. And so you do have the ability to store a lot of information in the visual world while you're doing something that maybe you don't want to do or you don't like doing. And then you can translate it into something beautiful and creative.
Now, do you write at all? Like, keep a diary or any? I mean, is there any process in that direction?
Yeah, I write quite a bit. I write in my notebook all the time. I mean, I could say that I keep a sketchbook, but it's more of a notebook.
Mm-hmm.
I write constantly, always with a pencil, and I draw a little bit. Like, I conceptualize my work a little bit, and I draw them out
yes.
to scale and stuff like that. But yeah, I do write a lot about the hardships and about the joys and about what I'm doing, what I'm going to do, and what I'm thinking about conceptually for my work and how I'm going to manifest that. Because oftentimes my notebook is right next to where I'm painting, because oftentimes when I'm painting, these thoughts come into my head that
yeah.
I just have to stop and
yeah.
I have to go write down my thoughts, because that is going to feed the work ultimately. So I think that no matter what you're doing, you know, you're always in the process of making.
So you're not originally from here, right?
No, I'm from Jersey City.
From
Jersey.
Yeah. but you stayed in Pacific Northwest.
I did.
And did it influence what you make?
It's been 28 years.
Yeah,
believe it.
I mean, is there Jersey in your work, or is it
yeah,
pretty much Pacific Northwest?
It, you know, there was a little Jersey in my work in like the middle 90s. Like,
right.
It's kind of like this. I don't know how to describe it. Like,
that might have been when I first met you.
It's really like these power towers and everything, you know, drippy paint and, you know.
A little more macho.
Yeah,
you're
a little
feeling
bit
more
like,
more of the influence
yeah,
of the dudes.
Like super grunge.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But the Pacific Northwest has had a tremendous influence on me, because I grew up, you know, fire escape gardening and looking at a brick wall, you know.
Yeah.
So then I move out here and it's like all these majestic untouched forests uh-huh. and these giant trees that made the trees in Jersey and everywhere on the East Coast look like twigs
True.
Coming out of the ground.
And the sky.
Yeah. And, you, and
an amazing
right.
sky here.
And the sky here, I mean, I study the clouds all the time outside my studio. Like,
you can
I just
see that in your
take
work.
These photos, and I base a lot of my paintings on the photos that I take of
mm-hmm.
the clouds. And just the sky was so open to me, like when I moved here. And it's just never, I've never gotten over how beautiful it is here. I'll never, it's just incredible. You know, you can drive to the coast and it's not like constant traffic. And then on the beach,
mm-hmm.
it's like wall to wall bodies.
No, it's all it's like
a
that
whole
at all.
Different thing.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful and beautiful. And I'm grateful and thankful that I get to live here every day.
Nice. Well, Elise, thanks so much for joining me today.
I've got to
wrap this up. So I've been talking with Elise Wagner. She's got a show, Uncharted Territories, that's at Butters Gallery. And I did want to mention, too, that you're going to give an artist talk. Is that July 12th?
Yes.
So what time?
It's from 1 to 3, and I'm going to start talking at 2.
Okay, all right. So maybe you can catch that artist talk at Butters Gallery, buttersgallery.com. My name is Ava Lake, and I believe that Joseph Galvan will be with you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. I'll be back in a couple weeks.
KBOO Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to co-sponsor The Bloom. a journey through transformational festivals. Showing Thursday, July 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater.
Amidst the global crisis of a dysfunctional old paradigm, a new renaissance of human culture is underway. The bloom illuminates the blossoming phenomenon of transformational festivals. Immersive, participatory realities that are having profound, life-changing effects on hundreds of thousands of lives.
That's The Bloom. Thursday, July 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. For more information, go to the KBOO website.
You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
KBOO Community Radio and Peña Flamenca de Portland are proud to co-sponsor Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. Pepe Rafael of Pepe and the Bottle Blondes will team up with Lily Last of Stomptown Flamenco for an evening of flamenco. Again, that's Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, located at Southeast 2nd Avenue and Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.